Will the House please come to order? Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Anderson, Bagby, Barbuto, Berger, Blake, Blickrey, Bonner, Brechtel, Brown, Buchanan, Byrd, Kennedy, Carson, Childers, Cohey, Connolly, Kraft, Davison, Dirks, Edmonds, Esquivel, Gilmore, Gingery, Goggles, Hales, Hallinan excused, Hammonds, Harshman, Harvey, Illaway, Yagi, Jorgensen, Kimball, Landon, Lockhart, Lubno, Madden, McKim, McComey, Miller, Millen, Moniz, Patton, Peasley, Pedersen, Peterson, Philp excused, Korberg, Roscoe, Simlick, Shepperson, Stewart, Stubson, Teeters, Thompson, Throne, Wallace, Swanitzer Dan, Swanitzer Dave, Mr. Speaker, Shepperson, 58 present, 2 excused.
The prayer today is again by Chaplain Del Hansen, representing the Veterans Medical Center of Cheyenne. Chaplain Hansen.
Let us pray. Heavenly God, the time of our work week is approaching half over, and although we're tired, help us to remember that there is much work left to be accomplished. So arrange our priorities this day that our energies and efforts might serve most effectively and achieve the purposes we've been sent here to accomplish. May our endeavors serve for the good of our state, its people, and ultimately your heavenly kingdom. Allow each of us to re-examine our personal agendas and make certain that the best interests of our state are the top concern. May each of us put our self-interests aside and join to serve the living sacrifices and witnesses you've called us to make, to use the provisions you've given us so that we may properly serve our state and its inhabitants. May our efforts be directed to examining the past to learn that which was good and right. Apply those lessons that are learned to maintain our state for the future generations yet to come. Lord, as we go about the business of planning and spending of our state, may the best use be sought and the resources applied for the state's future. Lord, we continue to seek your protection on all those who have served and those who continue to serve as defenders and protectors of our nation, our state, and our communities. Amen.
Amen. Please join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Will the House please come back to order? Journal Committee report.
Mr. Speaker, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of February 23, 2010 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Signed, Representative Moniz, Representative Barbuto.
Why did y'all get quiet after the Journal Committee report? All right. The doctor of the day is Dr. Tom Radosevich via Rock Springs, and we're glad to have him here, Casper, Wyoming. Dr. Radosevich. A brilliant doctor who was wise enough to marry a Cody girl. And the nurse of the day is Sally Meyer from Cheyenne Regional Medical Center. And Dr. Radosevich is also part of the Community Health Center in Casper. Representative Lockhart, members of the House today, excuse me, we'll do some privileges in just a moment, if you don't mind, please. Today we celebrate breast cancer survivorship and honor those who have lost their battle with the disease. It is also a day when we recognize the activities of the Komen Wyoming affiliate and their individual contributions to the breast cancer movement. We have several people in the gallery I would like to recognize. Please help me in welcoming these Komen Wyoming affiliate volunteers to the House of Representatives. Would you please stand? Representative Tom Larkard, who serves as the team leader for the House of Representatives Race for the Cure team, would like to say a few words on how you can help this worthwhile cause. Representative Lockhart, you may have privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As one of the team leaders, I'd like to recognize the cohort in the House should stand up with that nice pink outfit so you know her. Lori has been with us on this for the start. And as you know, we've set some records, and a lot of it had to do with her organizational skill and her perseverance with you. But as the House representatives, I'm pleased to have pledged their support again for the Race for the Cure and support of the tremendous cause, as touched on by our speaker. Each of us have known someone affected by breast cancer and understands the work to find the cure is not finished until the disease is eradicated. The Wyoming affiliate Susan B. Komen Race for the Cure is working to better the lives of those facing breast cancer in our community and our state. Those events like the Komen Race for the Cure, more than $2 million has been raised in support of this critical funding necessary for research, equipment, screening, and treatment of breast cancer. Over 75% of the funds stay in the state of Wyoming, going to local nonprofits, education, treatment, and screening. Please join me by filling out the race entry form that you have on your desk. If you look at this, you don't have to be in the race because we have phantom racers, and that's been our biggest fundraiser out of the Senate and the House. And I encourage you to fill these things out and give them either to Lori or myself, and we will see that we break the record from last year. Thank you again for all of your support for the Komen race.
Thank you for being here, ladies and gentlemen, for the special recognition today. And thank you, Minority Caucus Chairman Millen and Representative Lockhart, for your hard work in this very worthwhile effort. Representative Lockhart is indeed tough enough to wear pink on Hump Day, but if you notice that. But thank you for joining us, and hope you can make it back to Cheyenne on August 14th to sign up for the Wyoming's Race for the Cure and those who can't donate to the cause. So please participate. We appreciate it very much. Representative Millen, did you wish privilege?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. May I have privilege of the floor?
Please.
Thank
proceed.
You. Well, I would like to introduce you to three amazing people. They are here today in the South Gallery. The first is Stacy Ruminap. She's from the nationally recognized child advocate outreach and education agency, Stop Child Predators. This organization is based in Washington, D.C., working with law officials, lawmakers, parents, and others, keeping ahead of sexual predator trends. The second guest today is one which you've probably been hearing about in the news over the last several years. His name is Mr. Mark Lunsford. He is an intrepid advocate protecting children against sex offenders. Mr. Lunsford's own daughter, Jessica, was the victim in Florida whose Jessica's Law was named after. Instead of doing what many of us probably would have done, which is go crazy, this amazing dad has traveled around the United States educating, working with parents, legislators, and law officials on a way to protect children, all in the name of his own tragedy. And one of my good friends is Janie White, who's just a mom, and she's worked tirelessly and has a passion for this issue. And I'd just like to welcome you all to the house. Thank you for being here.
Welcome to the House of Representatives. It's nice to have you here today. We have with us also the Wyoming Futures class of Dr. Peter K. Simpson at the University of Wyoming. There are a number of them here today. Some of them have already probably headed over to the Senate, but I will just read off your names and you can stand up if you're here. Drew Hill, C.J. Young, Dana Walton, Caitlin Wallace, Jamie LeJambre, Mitch Mazur, Corey Gosko, K.L.B. Scott, Judith Kempke, Chardet Shepard, Aaron Percival, Abby Lewis, Liz Rader, Ben Pacheco, Danae Hunzi, Dan Shea, Calvin Heyer, Madison Brown, Ray Fuentes, Beth Martineau, Reese Jennigus, Nolan Gabeau, Matt Fournier, and Corin Shelley Reese. It's wonderful to have you here with us today. Thank you. And please accommodate them today. If you get a note, they'd love to talk to you about particular issues they're interested in. And I think you would be interested in what they have to say also. Who else? Any other announcements, privileges of the floor? Chairman Illaway?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Last night, I just want to say two things. Privileges of the floor.
Please proceed.
Please. Last night, I thought staff did a wonderful job. It's been a long time since I've almost made bed in the chamber, so I think we ought to give staff a heck of a hand for sticking with us and providing the food. Now, Mr. Speaker, a second privilege of the floor, if I may.
Sure.
I remember one of the former House members, when I first got in, always had something witty to read or something witty to say. And somebody sent me a very interesting email. It's very clean, so let me read it. I think it'll put a smile on your face. As a bagpiper, I play many gigs. Recently, I was asked by a funeral director to play at a graveside service for a homeless man. He had no family or friends, so the service was to be a pauper cemetery in the Kentucky backcountry. As I was not familiar with the backwoods, I got lost. And being a typical man, I didn't stop for directions. I finally arrived an hour late, saw the funeral guy was evidently gone, and the hearse was nowhere in sight. There were only the diggers and crew left, and they were eating lunch. I felt badly and apologized to the man for being late, or to the men for being late. I went to the side of the grave and looked down. The vault lid was already in place. I didn't know what else to do, so I started to play. The workers put down their lunches, began to gather round. I played out my heart and soul for this man with no family and friends. I played like I've never played before for this homeless man. And as I played Amazing Grace, the workers began to weep. They wept. I wept. We all wept together. When I finished, I packed up my bagpipes and started for my car. Though my head hung low, my heart was full. As I was opening the car door to the door to my car, I heard one of the workers say, "Sweet Mother of Jesus, I've never seen nothing like that before, and I've been putting in septic tanks for 20 years.
Thank you, I think. Representative Illoway?
Mr. Speaker?
Representative Dirks, you may have privilege of the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have with us today the Newcastle Middle School visiting our House of Representatives. Goodness sakes, I wonder what time they had to get up in the morning. They're here with Mr. Robert Munger, who also serves not only as a middle school teacher, but as a dedicated fireman in Newcastle for many years. Thank you, Mr. Munger, and thank you, Newcastle Middle School. Good to see you.
Welcome to the House of Representatives, Mr. Munger, and Newcastle Middle School students. It's nice to have you here. I'm sure 5 o'clock was really early. But have a good trip home and have a nice day here in Cheyenne. We're at that order of business of signing of enrolled acts. The reading clerk will read the enrolled act.
House Enrolled Act Number 1, being original House Bill Number 48, an act relating to school finance audits. Being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act Number 1, being original House Bill Number 48. I have so signed. Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 2, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Harshman, Jorgensen, Pedersen, Stewart, excused, Phelps, signed, representing Berger, chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred Senate File 69, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Brown, Childers, Connolly, Davison, Yagi, Millen, Shepperson, Thompson, signed, Representative Childers, chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom is referred Senate File 78, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Brown, Childers, Connolly, Davison, Yagi, Shepperson, Thompson, no, Millen, signed, Representative Childers, chairman.
We are at that order of business of bills on our Senate files on introduction. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 25.
Senate File 25 introduced by the Judiciary Committee.
First reading of the bill.
Act relating to liens.
Senate File 25 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 68.
Senate File 68 introduced by Senator Ross.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to Supreme Court Peace Officer.
Senate File 68 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Are there any re-referrals? Chairman Childers.
Mr. Speaker, I was waving a while ago, but that's all right. Mr. Speaker, I would like to re-refer Senate File 69, Natural Resource Large Project Funding, to the Appropriations Committee.
Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Any other re-referrals? We are at that order of business of consideration of bills on general file. Representative Blickery. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, so hold on one second. I got ahead of myself. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House resolve itself in the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, the House is resolved in the Committee of the Whole. Representative Blickery.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 4. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 4, introduced by the Corporation Committee, an act relating to special district elections. This bill was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Brown, Dirks, Hales, Illaway, Kimball, Lubno, Miller, Stubson, Zwanitz, Erdan. Sign representing Illaway, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it could do so with the recommendation that Senate File 4 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments. There are no amendments at all. And the good gentleman from House District 55 will explain the bill.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and welcome to the chair. This is a committee bill, Joint Corporations Committee bill. It's on special district elections. We can drag this out really long, but it's pretty straightforward. Basically, at the bottom of page 1, top of page 2, defines what we're doing here. It's about special district elections, including mail ballot elections, and they shall be overseen by the county clerk in the county wherein the special district exists. If the special district exists in one or more counties, then the largest portion of the special election district shall oversee the election. Oversee as used in this section may include training, advice, or assistance, but does not include responsibility for the actions, conduct, or outcome of the election unless the county clerk conducts the election. On page 2, lines 14 and 15, this is also new language. On mail ballots, mail ballot elections shall also be overseen by the county clerk as provided by Wyoming Statute 2229.113. That's the bill. I'd be happy to answer any questions. If I don't have any questions, I call for the question.
All those against say no. Senate File number 4 has passed. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 5. Chairman Illaway.
Better get the reading clerk to do it first.
I apologize. May we have the reading of the bill?
Senate File 5, introduced by the Corporation Committee, an act relating to special districts and other specified public entities. This bill was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Brown, Dirks, Hales, Illaway, Kimball, Miller, Stubson, Zwanitz, Erdan, excused, Lubno, sign representing Illaway, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 5 do pass. There are no amendments, and the good gentleman from House District 49 will explain the bill.
Mr. Chairman, members of the 60th, I learned from my colleague from Albany County that there are simple bills. This is a simple bill. Essentially, it is adding a Section 12 to the Title 16 City, County, State, and Local Powers. It essentially adds only the following information that I feel you might have questions about. In Section B, page 6,
All special district and other specified entities shall maintain the records of this section for public review at their business office, if the business office is open to the public for at least 20 business hours. I'm quite sure there are many special districts that do not have business hours that run 20 hours. So in light of that, on page 7, if that is the case, line 4, the special district or other specified entity shall file copies of those records with the county clerk in the county wherein the largest portion of the district or entity lies. And then, essentially, the third major part is these documents may be in electronic format unless otherwise specified by the county clerk. That doesn't necessarily mean if someone comes in and wishes to look at them, they can either look at them in an electronic format, or if there is no public terminal, perhaps the county clerk could provide them a copy through that electronic format. That's all I have. I stand for questions, and if there are none, I call for the question.
The question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Say no. Senate File 5 has been passed. The next bill is Senate File 10. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 10, introduced by the Travel Committee, an act relating to state lands, state parks, Bear River State Park. This bill was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Brown, Childers, Connolly, Davison, Yagi, Millen, Shepperson. Excused, Thompson. Signed, Representative Childers, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Childers.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a recommendation that Bill Number 10 engrossed do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and I'll turn it over to the good representative from District 58 to cover the bill.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, I bring to you Senate File Number 10, which is the result of some of our interim work. Our committee was charged with looking at some of the land management issues regarding state parks, and this was one of the things that came up. Basically, there is some land that is operated under Bear River State Park, but the title is unclear. And so this title of 280 acres that needs to be included in the Bear River State Park has to have our legislative approval. Again, they're operating it under the state parks now. The hospital didn't have the authority to change that land, and so that's what we're doing here. So this would bring the total number of acres operated under Bear River State Park to 324 acres. And this just, again, clears up the title. It was a record-keeping oversight, and but, again, because of our legislative authority, we have to okay the transfer of land. And the meets and bounds is not in statute. That was a question that we did have because we, as you'll see in some of the next bills, we are trying to clear up some of those statutes, and they are not going to be in the statutes anymore but are being taken care of under the, I think it's the Administrative Procedure Act. I guess someone will correct me if I'm wrong. But anyways, it's very simple, just clearing up the title. And we do have a Committee of the Whole amendment that I will let someone else move at this time.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise in support of this bill. What happened here is about 2 years ago, we ran a bill through the legislature that allowed Unit County to purchase 1,000 acres to the east of the Bear River State Park. In the title search, this came up. The state parks had the possession of the land, but they didn't have the legal title consummated in the chain of title. So this is an important piece of legislation for cleaning this up. And the county commissioners of Unit County certainly support this, and it helps all of us because we've worked very close deals with state parks and the county and developing the Bear River State Parks plus the adjacent 1,000 acres.
Chairman Childers.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to Senate File 10, and I'll explain it. If you'll check on line 2 of the engrossed version of the bill, to be included should be struck because those properties are already in the park. So we don't really need the language. They're already owned. And if there's no questions about it, I'll call for the question.
All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The amendment is adopted.
Question on the bill.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Senate file number 10 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill is Senate file number 11. Please read the bill.
Senate File 11, introduced by the Travel Committee, an act relating to state parks and cultural resources, state parks acquisition and disposition of lands. This bill was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, which recommended that it be approved. Ayes, Bonner, Brown, Childers, Connolly, Davison, Yagi, Millen, Shepperson, excused, Thompson. Signed, Representative Childers, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Representative Childers.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 11 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee amendments, and I'll turn the discussion of the bill over to the good representative from District 15. Or District 13, to discuss the bill.
Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Chairman. I thought I had Senate File 12 to introduce, but I think I could do Senate File 11 as well.
You got 12? You got...
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, she's confused.
Oh.
She does have 11.
I am very sorry to the body.
I
like Senate File 12, but we'll do Senate File 11. Senate File 11 is another one of the... is the result of interim work on state parks land management issues. What Senate File 11 does is it allows the Department of State Parks to take care of what's called de minimis disposals of state park lands, and those lands are those that are less than 5 acres. We heard testimony in the committee that state parks has several parcels that are right now, for example, in the middle of private property with absolutely no public access to them, and have not been maintained by state parks. This allows them the opportunity to take care of these lands in good and meaningful ways. So I would ask for your favorable consideration. Just also to let you know that we took out the language that allows for state parks to acquire lands without going through a formal process. So, are there any questions?
You have heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill.
Question on the bill.
Aye. All those against say no. Senate file number 11 has passed the House, or passed the Committee of the Whole. Representative Brechtel.
Mr. Chairman, privilege of the floor. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to, first of all, as the good coach from my community would say, number one on your license plates and number one in our hearts, we have up here to my right, your left, in the balcony, we have Mrs. Landry's fifth grade class from, they're down here studying history from Paradise Valley Elementary School. Would you please give them a warm welcome?
Thank you, and welcome to the House, kids. The next bill is Senate File 12. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 12, introduced by the Travel Committee, an act relating to state parks and historic sites, boundaries, and designations. This bill was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, which recommended that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Bonner, Brown, Childers, Connolly, Davison, Yagi, Millen, Shepperson, excuse, Thompson, signed Representative Childers, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Childers.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 12 engrossed do pass, and I further move the Standing Committee amendment, the adoption of the Standing Committee amendments, and I'll turn the discussion of the bill and the amendment over to the good Representative from District 25, Big Powell, close to Cody.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I bring you Senate File 12, and keep your brooms out. This is another house cleaning effort that results from our interim committee work. The purpose of Senate File 12 to facilitate land management by bringing consistency to how state park, historic site, archaeological site, and recreation area holdings are recorded. In short, Senate File 12 will provide for declaring state parks and historic sites in statute while repealing statutory authority or statutory legal descriptions and requiring that those legal descriptions be maintained by rule. Meets and bounds legal descriptions can be lengthy and complex, and maintaining those boundary descriptions through the Administrative Procedure Act rather than by statute would be more efficient. At present, seven state parks and historic sites are described and declared in Wyoming statutes. The boundaries for these locations are described in statute with meets and bounds legal descriptions. However, the majority of properties managed by the state parks, managed as state parks and historic sites, are not described or declared specifically in statute, nor do meets and bounds descriptions exist in statute. This creates some gray areas for management as far as law enforcement and construction on those sites. So that's what this bill would resolve by providing a consistent designation of all state recreation areas in statutes. The Standing Committee amendment does a couple of the housekeeping things that even the bill drafting missed, and so it's all about providing consistency in the way we refer in statute to state parks, state historic sites, etc. I would stand for questions, and if there are none,
You have heard the motion. Chairman McConey.
Well, thank you. I just have a question. You're still going to have the legal meets and bounds recorded someplace. Will they maintain the copy of each one of these then with their records instead of them being in statute? I can understand where the problem with trying to have them in statute every time you want to change something or buy or sell or anything, why it could really be a problem. So I'm for the bill. I just would like a little bit to know about where this kind of stuff's going to be archived.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, yeah, just a question on this bill. I just now looked at it for the first time, so caught me off guard a little bit. I'm just curious why we're doing this and taking it out of these legal descriptions. Does this change anything or any requirements to add or take away land that may require legislative approval or some other process, or is this just simply an internal process to make it easier to manage the lands?
Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to respond. If I need help, the good chairman of Travel Recreation will back me up. There is no requirement. There is no requirement that a state park be described with a legal description in statute, but you're absolutely correct. It is that they have to be maintained somewhere. So with this bill, the State Parks and Cultural Resources Department would be the repository of all legal descriptions of all state parks, historic sites, recreation areas, and that would be the place for where people would go to get access to those legal descriptions. There is no legal requirement that it be done in statute. This is all about management authority. There have been issues that have been raised because the references are different in statute. Does state parks law enforcement have authority in areas that are not mentioned in statute? And this particular declaration in statute would clear that up.
Chairman Childers.
Well, Mr. Chairman, while that is true that the state parks will keep legal descriptions of the properties, these parks are just like any other piece of property. They're recorded with the county or counties and placed in the record at the at county legal description, wherever they're placed in county.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That does answer a question. It was also spoken up that, yes, those deeds would be recorded, of course, in land that is owned within a county. But then the repository of all would be with state parks and historical. I would call for the question.
You've heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The standing committee amendment number one has been adopted. We are back on the bill. The question having been called, all those in favor of Senate file number 12, vote say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate file number 12 has passed the committee of the whole. Our next bill for your consideration is Senate file number 19. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate file 19, introduced by Senator Ross, an act relating to DUI impairment period and period for enhanced penalties. This bill was referred to committee number one, Judiciary, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Begbie, Barbudo, Blickery, Kennedy, Patton, Peasley, Quarberg, Throne. Excuse Gingrey, sign representing Quarberg, Vice Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 19 do pass. This bill has no amendments. There is a handout in your box, says Senate File 19 at the top. Sort of explains to you what this bill does. It does four things. We have new definitions. There are some substances out there. One of them is called salvia dementia. Is an herb that certainly affects your ability to drive. So what we tried to do is come up with a new definition that includes a lot of these substances that are not actually listed in our controlled substance schedules. Second thing it deals with is what's called time of test, and I'll go through that in a moment. And then it also solves the problem of lookbacks. And lastly, it deals with this issue of counting subsequent convictions from offense rather than conviction. There's been some questions as to which bill this is, so I thought I'd give you a little bit of a history so you know which bill you're voting on. Last year, we did a comprehensive bill out of this House. Overwhelmingly supported that bill. It had a lot more in it. It went over to the other body, and it didn't make it. This year, in the other body, pulled out of that same bill at least these four provisions that they were more comfortable with, and have sent this over to us. So these are things that last year we were strongly supportive of, and there were some other things that we couldn't convince the other body of. So here's sort of a compromise between the two. These are four things that it appears we can all agree on. So why do we need to do this bill? There's an organization that has Mothers in the name. It has ranked us number two from the bottom. We're the second worst state in the union for per capita deaths of DUI. And a lot of that has to do with that we need to improve our legislation. And there's a lot of things that we could be doing. Sobriety checkpoints is a big one, and a lot of states have moved toward that statistically have shown a correlation to reducing DUIs. And there's certainly other things we could be doing. But this is a really good start. And what this is doing, I explain the definition. Let me explain time of test. Time of test is an interesting issue. Under the current statute, it is whether or not you're 0.08 at the time of driving. So when you're driving the car, you need to be at a 0.08 to be convicted. The difficulty is that the officer has approached your car. He has reasonable suspicion to ask you to step out of the car. He then goes through his field sobriety tests, his FSTs. From his FSTs, he's determined that you are drunk. He places you under arrest. He then transports you to the local jail. It's finally at the jail that he has you blow into what's called an intoximeter. It's a device that registers your blood alcohol content. The difficulty is that a large time period could have elapsed, or some time period has elapsed. The defendants have argued to juries in the past that, yes, I was 0.08 when I blew in the intoximeter at the jail, but at the time of driving, I was actually a 0.07, and actually I had what's called a rising BAC, that while we were driving there, it was continuing to go up. The way to prove this is what's called extrapolation. They do backwards extrapolation. And what they do is bring in experts. The experts testify as to you take the gender of the person, you take the age of the person, you take the weight of the person, and you take their self-reported, which is always sort of the funny part, their self-report of how many drinks they had and, you know, what the intervals of those drinks, and you can sometimes extrapolate backwards. This has caused a huge problem in our courts because the courts have ruled that these experts actually have to appear in person. So what happens is many of our lab technicians here at the lab have to drive to every single one of these hearings and testify. Most states have done away with that, and they've moved toward what's called time of test rule. So we will be joining the majority of the states that have moved toward time of test. We had the discussion last year as to the we did an amendment last year that it goes from the time of lawful arrest and valid traffic stop. So we seem to have dealt with those issues. The third one was look back. Look back is this issue. DUI is one of the few laws where we allow you to do what's called do-overs. We don't do this in any other law. We don't say, well, yes, this is your second kidnapping, but, you know, that first one, that was 10 years ago, so we're not going to count it. In DUI, for some reason, we do that. And so we allow there to be do-overs. So once enough time has elapsed, That's no longer a second or a third or a fourth, or in some situations like we just had in my county, a tenth. We get to count it. They get to count it again as a first-time DUI. Under the current law, that time period, what we call a look-back, is 5 years. What this bill is moving that out to 10 years, a 10-year look-back. And then lastly, there was a confusion as to when do you count look-backs. Do you count from the date of conviction, or do you count from the date of offense? And here's why this was a problem. So let's say you get arrested on one day. You're well within that five-year period look-back. But your lawyer asks for enough continuances so your conviction is actually outside the five-year. Now suddenly, even though that was your perhaps your fourth DUI, now it suddenly magically became your first DUI. So what we're trying to do is count from the date of offense to the date of offense rather than date of conviction to date of conviction. Those are the four things the bill does, and I would urge you to vote aye.
Question being called. All those in favor of
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, I apologize. Is there any discussion? And now I see there is some.
There's always.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 2, line 13, the psychoactive substance, is that defined? And if it's not, I received an email that said this could include caffeine. I don't know if that's true, but I know people who consume a lot of caffeine. Drug is defined. Is that a term we should define?
Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the key part of that definition is the second clause where it says capable of impairing. So it has to be able to impair you, but then you have to flip over, and I know the bill doesn't have, you don't have all the current law there, but it has to be to a point that it renders you incapable of safely driving. So that would have to be a determination of the court. Was the reason you rammed into that other car, was it because of some substance that's in your body that made you incapable of safely driving? Or was it just an accident that you just ran into someone? So I think that that second part, and you'll see that over, actually, you can see it on page 3, line 13, which is Romanet 3 there, to a degree which renders him incapable of safely driving would be the second part that would have to be proven. So not just, you're not guilty of a DUI simply because you have a drug or psychoactive substance in your body that's capable of impairing. You have to also satisfy the element that you were rendered incapable of safely driving.
Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to commend the sponsor of this bill. I think this is a great effort and a great bill. I am concerned, I guess, about these efforts and would urge this body to continue these efforts. Since I've been down here, we've ramped up the penalties almost every year, and our DUI arrest statistics have gone up every year. I think the good chairman discussed it a little bit, but was there any discussion or any thought on some of the other things that we can do statistically? The average person before they get stopped drives 27,000 miles while drunk, which means that you could drive all the way across the country and then back and forth and back and forth three more times before you'd ever get expected to have any contact with law enforcement. And so has there been any discussion or was there any discussion in the committee about increasing law enforcement contacts with folks so that it was more the certainty of getting caught rather than the severity of getting caught?
Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, certainly we did discuss other issues out there, and the good gentleman makes an excellent point. the statistically, I guess I can't name the organization, but there's an organization that's with the federal government, and they've gone through and statistically shown what has a correlation to actually reducing DUIs, and the good gentleman makes a good point that penalties is not actually one that shows a strong correlation to bringing down DUIs. It's not as if people are reading the statute books and realizing that, you know, the penalty changed. What does make a huge difference is what's called sobriety checkpoints, which is not in this bill, but sobriety checkpoints is definitely one where you have, if you increase the interactions with a law enforcement officer, as the good gentleman just said, driving 27,000 miles, whatever it was, before you come into contact. So sobriety checkpoints is certainly something the state should look at in the future. We also should look at refusals. In my county, 25% of a first-time DUI refuse. That's a pretty normal number. A second and subsequent offense, it's 75% refuse. Essentially, when you refuse, there is no criminal penalty. You are going to lose your license, but you'll have no criminal record. And many people who have second and subsequent offenses have learned this lesson, that in Wyoming, just refuse and you will walk. And so we certainly should look at that issue in the future. But again, that's not in this bill. And so I'm just answering the question as to what other things are out there. But this bill is pretty narrow, and these are things that we could agree with the other body down the hall as to some things that we could do. It will make an effect, but we certainly have further to go.
Representative Hammond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In answer to the last question and also with regard to the discussion so far, those of us who sponsored this bill have been working for months with the state organizations, the Governor's Task Force, of impaired driving, as had the good chairman speaking, for several years. Because this is a budget session, the determination was made to make this a cohesive effort to do those things in order to enforce the existing law in the most effective way possible. But I want to bring to your attention a direct quote from the good chairman from the other body at the end of the building, who presented in front of our Judiciary Committee. And what he said directly was he wanted to applaud the chairman who just was speaking for single-handedly raising the debate on driving under the influence in Wyoming and making our roads safer for all of us. And, in fact, the good chairman who has been speaking, much of the language that you see in this bill is of his origination. With regard to the process, because of the bill that you see before us, it was a bill that was worked on over the months and tried to keep it clean and simple because of the being a budget session. But I did want to share one last thing with you with regard to the implementation of and how this works. The director for chemical testing testified, and I think all of you would find this interesting. He felt that the 0.08 within 2 hours, that levels the playing field. It makes it the debate that we have now in the courtrooms and with the individuals, that this would level the playing field. And just so that you understand it, these are the statistics that he shared with the committee. One drink would generally register as a 0.02 in your, if you were to take the intoximeter. However, if you were at 0.05 or 0.06, which are legal amounts for you to have, they have done live tests in this laboratory, and what they have found is that when they interview the people who are at 0.05 or 0.06, all of those people universally say, oh, no, I shouldn't drive. I'm impaired. But interestingly, when people are at 0.08 up to 0.1, those individuals say, I can drive. Sure, I can. And so what they have done through this testing is that they've discovered that the people who think they can drive are the ones who are intoxicated. And, in fact, many people who think that they can't drive are not up at that level of 0.08. The laboratory who is called on, I know you may be aware of this in these cases, are called on to testify all across the state. And they felt that this bill would be very beneficial in terms of their jobs and helping us make sure that we're consistent in all of the courtrooms and on the roads.
Representative Carson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have some questions. I guess first to comment that this bill, in its current form, I think is a good one, but I have some concerns on page 2 related to the drug psychoactive substances. Two questions regarding, the use of marijuana and the use of prescription drugs, or a combination of prescription drugs and alcohol, combination of marijuana and alcohol. And I guess my concern would be, is it possible the way this is drafted that somebody may fail a urine analysis? Maybe a cop has suspicion, pulls over, there's substance found or paraphernalia found in an automobile, and since they would fail a UA in that case, I don't know how they would get that, but if there was a UA tested from a previous, encounter that individual had with marijuana, that they would get a DUI, and in fact they weren't under the influence, and I have a concern with that. The other concern with the prescription drugs is, I don't have the definition of a controlled substance in front of me, but I guess that may fall out. But I would also argue that maybe, you know, if you pop three or four Oxycontin and you get behind your automobile, you're driving under the influence. And I wonder, how are we, on the little bottle, prescription bottle says don't operate a vehicle or don't operate machinery. How is this all going to shake out? I'd like to hear from the good chairman.
Chairman Gingery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Excellent question. I've done only a few cases where you're dealing with substances other than alcohol. If you have a DUI where it's dealing with alcohol, it's much more clear how you prosecute the case. If you get a .08, that helps a lot in your prosecution. If it's anything other than alcohol, meaning if someone is using an illegal substance like marijuana, or if they're using a legal substance that they've been prescribed but they've taken too many than they should have, those are difficult cases, and I'll walk you through how you prosecute those. If you look on page 3, there's 3 different ways to prosecute these. One is, you'll see there under Romanet 1, line 4, just simply, do they have an alcohol concentration of .08? Well, that clearly would not be dealing with marijuana or with any prescription drugs. So skip down there to line 13, Romanet 3, where it says, and this is what you would prosecute these under, to a degree which renders him incapable of safely driving, is under the influence of alcohol, is under the influence of controlled substance, or C, is under the influence of a combination of any elements named in A and B. So what you're normally doing is going under B there, is under the influence of a controlled substance. You would have to prove not just simply that they had marijuana in their system. I mean, they could have it in their system, but you would also actually have to prove that because of that, it was rendering them incapable of safely driving. I'll tell you where you normally figure this out, is these cases usually result after an accident. So an accident has occurred, and then it gets charged. It's rare. There are some officers that are trained in what's called drug recognition evaluations, where they do more than just looking for alcohol usage. They're looking for drug usage, too. And we certainly need to get our officers more trained on what's called DRE. But that's how you would prosecute one of those.
Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a bill that many of my constituents are very much in favor of, and I just have a quick question for the good chairman of Judiciary. I'm wondering if in your introduction you talked about a substance, it might be called something like Salvia, something like that, and how does the use of that substance, which is my understanding it is not a controlled substance, fit into this bill? Thanks.
Chairman Gingery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Another excellent question. That is what was driving this definition change, was that actual substance that was just mentioned, Salvia? So I don't know how to say it, but it's some type of herb or something. Anyway, what happens is, we have a list of controlled substances, and there's different schedules, schedule 1, 2, 3, 4. And depending the severity of that drug is which schedule you're on. Because we've entered into a world of so many synthetic drugs and herbs and things, it's hard for the legislature to keep up with adding every new drug that comes onto the schedules, onto the controlled substance schedules. So this was a way of, and many states have moved to this direction, of making a more broad definition to include these substances that may not actually be on your controlled substance list. But again, the key part is that you have that second element that you're going to have to prove that the, because I think salvia is actually legal in the state of Wyoming. You can actually buy it. Some states have banned it, but this state you can still buy it. So it's not illegal to take that substance. What's illegal is, and it's actually not illegal to drive with that substance in your system. What's illegal is to drive with that substance in your system to a point that renders you incapable of safely driving. And I know that seems sort of an iffy wording, and that's why in most situations you lose those in court, but that's for another day to talk about.
Representative Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question. Along those same lines, we've had these issues where people are under the influence of a lot of anti-anxiety medications. And I see what you're doing there on page 2. You've removed the reference in the statute to where you said before. Well, currently it says any drug or substance as defined by 35.7.1002A Romanet 4. You've removed that, the problem that I've seen in these cases is that under Title 35, it doesn't adequately define a lot of those anti-anxiety medications and things like that, and you have a lot of people that are just totally impaired, and we've run into this problem where it's not defined under Title 35, and maybe this actually doesn't remove it. I mean, you have in here controlled substance includes any drug or psychoactive substance capable of impairing a person's physical or mental faculties. And you added that as a C. So I guess it does not remove the reference to Title 35. But does C here, where we just say any drug, will that take care of that issue where some of the commonly used anti-anxiety medications are abused by people and they're out driving and they're under the influence, just as somebody with alcohol? Because that's been a defense in the past. I just want to make sure that if we do this, if we need to add something so that when someone references or a prosecution references the word drug, they can go to a place and say, yes, it includes prescription medication, because some of the prescription medication is included in the schedules, but some of them are not.
Chairman Gingery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll start with the first part of the question was, we actually weren't removing anything. If you notice there on page 2, line 13, that's a C, so we're just adding another section to that definition. A and B are still in. You just don't see them in your bill. But A is any drug or substance defined by 35.7.1002, which is the controlled substance schedules. And then B is any glue, aerosol, or other toxic vapor, which when intentionally inhaled or sniffed results in impairment of an individual's ability to drive safely. And then we're adding in C here. As to your second question, I see your point that we still need to be vigilant, even though this is here, we still need to be vigilant as new drugs come online, that we repeatedly are going back every few years and updating our schedules. We did that, I believe, 2 years ago. We went through and updated our schedules, but you're correct. We probably should be working on that.
Representative Peasley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just need to make a couple comments on this, and I trust that the good chairman who's presenting the bill, who's on the same committee with me, can address that after I get done. I think I look back over the last 50 years, and I think the laws on drunk driving have been before this legislature each time. I think it's the most amended and modified statute we have. And I'll have to tell you that people in my district are just jumping up and down, get tougher, get tougher, get tougher. I even tried to do a little search to find out when the last time was the two major newspapers in the state didn't have a whining editorial right before the session started saying, we've got to get tougher on DUI. And I suppose the band is already halfway down the street. We're going to have to keep marching that direction. And every year, I mean, we've already heard in the presentation of this bill, when I heard it in the interim, it was, we got to get this all fixed up so we don't have to keep coming back and fixing it. And now we're hearing as the bill is presented, well, it's going to be a good start. And I'm just kind of wondering when this start is going to end, but it struck me when the representative from the land of the president's favorite mineral was talking about how do we get back and prevent this. And last year we had this interlock device that the representative from county named after the Shoshone chieftain who passed away 110 years ago last weekend. For those of you that didn't know that, I'll point that out. Chief Washakie passed away, I think, 1900 in February. So in any event, as she presented that bill last year, and it passed, and I understand that. This idea that we've got to start getting to the root causes is going to preoccupy us for the next generation. And the problem with that is we're trying to get into the prevention. We want to find out, why are they still driving? How do they get in? Why should we let them in? And each time we go back, we go further into your life. And pretty soon you'll have to blow a breathalyzer to leave your house, because each of us will have that sort of person taking care of you. And I realize safety, it seems, is more important than freedom. And as we take from one and give to the other, I just want you to keep it in mind. Each one of these steps is just more control. And one of the things this bill does, ladies and gentlemen of this fine body, is it now makes it a crime to do something that has nothing to do with what we're trying to stop. And that is, if you did, we don't like this chug-a-lug defense. In other words, I'm perfectly capable of driving. I got two blocks to drive home. I chug-a-lug my two shots of tequila. Yahoo, thanks, guys. See you in a minute. Gone. Drive down the street two blocks to my house. Walk into my house. Knock at the door 15 minutes later. Police officer there. Well, you were caught. We saw you speeding home. Whatever is reason for checking me out was. Pretty soon I'm down at the station. Pretty soon we take a test. Pretty soon I fail. I'm convicted. Now understand, we all feel great pain for the prosecutors and the difficulty they have proving these cases. I was one of those prosecutors and I was one of those defense attorneys. And I tell you, the next thing we've got to take care of, and next year I want you to keep this in mind. Now that we want to get the guy that wasn't really drunk when he was driving, but because it's hard to prove that he was, we need to have it either a crime not to take a test, or we have to be able to say, well, it's the time of the test thing. The next thing we have to do is get rid of the biggest problem prosecutors have, and I'm sure the good chairman will tell you this, and that's jury nullification. It's a booger for all you prosecutors. You get in there, and there's 12 or 6 people on the jury, and they're feeling sorry for this guy. They know it's a loss of a job, maybe a marriage, whatever. And those darn jurors will listen to that evidence, and they get the good expert from the state of Wyoming down there, and boy, they've got him extrapolated and proven, and all the bumps are taken care of, and they've got him convicted, and those 6 people turn him loose. And I submit that would be a good next step next year. Let's get rid of the doggone jury system and these DUIs so we can make it safer on those streets. Thank you.
Chairman Gingery. Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am on in support of this bill, but I'm just concerned that we may have expanded and thrown our net just a little bit wider than we want. In all our discussions, I don't see any addressing of those people with medical conditions that might come into interplay, like anaphylaxis, that would create some problems in passing roadside sobriety tests or the other, I call them roadside aerobics, that you're required to perform. And the example that comes to mind is I've gone to my local restaurant, I've had my burger, and they put pickles on it, and I am deathly allergic to pickles, and I've had two beers. And in the process of operating my vehicle, I lose control of it because of a non-alcohol-related condition. So if the kind chairman could explain how that fits into the expanded regulations, I really appreciate that.
Representative McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've heard some good discussion. I was off the floor for a minute visiting some of the students, but I heard a lot of good discussion. But I look at this bill as not this first time person that's been out there that happens to have an encounter and gets picked up for drunk driving. All right, and is prosecuted. How many people are we going to kill in Wyoming by the people that were drunk the first time, were drunk the second time, were drunk the third time? That's what this bill is trying to do. It's trying to find ways that we can maybe cast this net. Maybe this net is a little too wide. But I'm concerned for my children and my grandchildren and myself, because there's a lot of these people out there and we're having a lot of alcohol-related accidents in Wyoming, even if they're a one-car rollover. But the fact of the matter is that we need to take some type of positive step to eliminate some of these people from the highway. The occasional person that goes out and has two or three social drinks and unfortunately does something where you get stopped. I had that experience once. I hadn't been drinking. I was just looking at the Christmas tree lights, gone a slick road, slid down into before I got stopped into the valley pan. This car was coming up the street, stopped. I went on across the street, followed me, turned another corner, pulled me over. And because I had slid down there, he was looking for probable cause to think maybe I was a drunk because it was the time when all the Christmas parties were. I got really mad. And then I thought about what he was doing. And it changed my mind. And by the time he brought my license back to me, I apologized to him because I wasn't really nice to him. On and for the bill.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. I have a question about how on page 3, the new Romanet B2 and the two-hour measurement, how does that affect the presumption in 233C that's not in the bill? And maybe you can answer. If you need more information about that, I'll be happy to supply it. But it says in the statute that if you're under 0.05, it's presumed you can safely operate your motor vehicle. If you're between 0.05 and 0.08, it's presumed that you can't. Or maybe there's no presumption before 0.05. There is a presumption. Maybe I'm screwing it all up. But maybe the good chairman can tell me how that new subsection affects that presumption when it says in 233C, at the time alleged, and I would assume that's the time of driving, so it wouldn't affect it.
Chairman Gingery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think there was a few questions. I'll try to handle them all. There was the question about you eat a pickle that was bad, and it caused you to get into an accident or something. First of all, I don't know of any prosecutor that would probably actually do the charge over the pickle, but... maybe if they did, but I think a jury would see that you had not done that intentionally. That wasn't something, you actually have a lot of accidents occasionally where someone has a stroke or has some issue where they get into an accident that was not really there. They didn't do something intentional. They didn't take the medication knowing it, and so I don't think that would actually come into play. As to the issues that were brought up by the good gentleman about juries and jury nullification and whatnot, I agree with him on the issue of I wish we didn't have to come back each year. That was one reason I had brought a bill that I thought was pretty comprehensive, and we passed it out of here last year, and it didn't make it. So we've sort of settled a little bit, but like my wife says to her kindergartners, she always says, you get what you get and you don't throw a fit. And so I'm getting what I can get. and you know, perhaps we won't need to be back next year, but you know, until we can raise our ranking, I mean, right now we're number two from the bottom. You know, people are dying on our streets. Until we can bring that ranking up some slightly, at least, that people are not dying as much. And it's not because of large distances or culture of drinking. You know, everyone's doing their job. The law enforcement's doing their job. Sheriffs are doing their job. The prosecutors, the judges, the governor's doing his job. He appointed a good commission to work on this. The problem is our statutes. And our statutes need to be improved. And our statutes need to not allow so many loopholes to allow people to walk on DUIs. We're actually pulling over the people, but the problem is they're walking without getting a conviction. And as to the issue of your freedoms, it is not a constitutional right to be able to drive on our roads and kill other people. That's never been a right. It's a privilege to drive on our roads. And if you can't drive on our roads in a sober way without killing others, then you shouldn't be on our roads. As to the last issue, as to the presumptions, in the bill that I did, actually I took out the presumptions, but it actually works with the presumptions still in, because the presumptions, once you get to .08, the presumption is that they are intoxicated. So I think this would actually trump that. The presumptions more go with Roman at 1, but I don't see a conflict between Roman at 2 and having the presumption still there. They relate more to Roman at 1, though.
Representative Landon.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I just wanted to hopefully add some information to help us think about how we deal with this. I heard the good representative from the Gillette area talk about how we keep passing the tougher legislation and our numbers of DUI keep going up. Heard the good representative from the center part of the state talk about trading freedom for safety. And then the good representative from the Lander area talks about the ultimate, seems like, purpose is to try to lessen or eliminate individuals who are under the influence from being on the highways. And I hope this statute will help solve that problem. But to understand the issue, I think, is broader than anything that's been discussed here so far, so I thought I'd just inject this into it. There's a book, if you're looking for a good read this summer, that's titled Against the Gods. And one of the things it talks about is measuring anything independent and how it falls out into the bell curve. So if we measure the heights of everybody in the house, we get this. We measure the eyesight acuity, we get this. Just any independent behavior, you get the bell curve. So what I think we're dealing with here is we're dealing with a phenomenon that really is beyond our control. We're dealing with the tail end of a bell curve of human behavior. And I don't know what the answer is, but I think we will continue to frustrate ourselves year after year after year, because I'm not sure that is controllable. I'm not sure how we grab a hold of that and make a difference in that bell curve, in that tail end of behavior, and so that I think is the challenge to wrestle with in the future, and until we come up with that answer, and that's what we're trying to work on, but I just want to define the problem a little bit, and explain so that you can almost take that home to explain to your constituents who expressed outrage that we aren't able to do anything about it. There are some things that are bigger than we are, and human behavior and those natural laws that we cannot repeal are bigger than we are.
Is there more discussion? Representative Peasley?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I guess my second time, is that what we're... We don't do that here, do we? Okay. Mr. Chairman, and I really appreciate the chairman of committee number 10 for explaining the bell curve. And that two things I want to clear up that maybe everyone misses when I make that argument about safety and health and all of that and freedom is we are always inclined to forget about the bell curve. And so if we're second from the bottom or second from the top, we have to declare an emergency. And then as soon as we move off of that spot, another state falls into that place and they declare an emergency. And there is this constant rush to get to the top or the bottom of the list, depending on what kind of good thing or bad thing you're describing. I think we have to look at it more rationally. And it's almost played by some of these national organizations that move from state to state and have this drumbeat of urgency, action, action, action. And they say, oh, you're now in 47th place. You've struggled to get up to 38th, and then they go to the state that's now fallen there. There's always going to be half of the people below average. And then we get very pompous and say, well, but we don't have to be in the lower half. That isn't the way to play the game. I mean, Wyoming is a little bit more wide open. We have a little bit longer highways, for goodness sakes. We have three seasons of winter and one season of road repair. We always have trouble driving. We have a cowboy mentality, and we're always going to have a few people more than the rest getting hurt. But I know this is not a right, and I haven't heard a single concept attacked more as not a right than the right to get around in a car. Every other thing, we seem to pass over it, but don't forget, we haven't got absolute rights. And we always forget that the ability to drive is critical in this state. So it shouldn't be just passed off as one of those little privileges like the right to own a Tweety Bird or something in an apartment under your lease. This is an important substantive privilege, I think, akin to a right. At least it's based on a right of mobility. And when we take it away, let's take it away carefully. And we don't want people out on the streets killing us. But then again, I don't want the school crossing guard at my door every morning checking my breath to see how I look for my drive that morning. And I just want you to watch this as we go and don't always be taken in by this false, fallacy of composition when we twist it around and make it sound like we're really bad because we're second from the bottom. Look at it a little more objectively, and again, I don't know what choice you have but to pass this. For goodness sakes, if you don't pass it, you're going to love drunks and hate those poor victims. So I'm just asking you, as we go forward as a legislative body, let's remember we have more than one task here, and freedom is not one that should be lightly discarded. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion? The question having been called, all those in favor of Representative Gingery's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that bill number Senate File 19 do pass, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
No? House... Or Senate File 19 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Our next bill is Senate File 63. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 63, introduced by Senator Meyer, an act relating to water irrigation district assessments. This bill was referred to Committee No. 5, Agriculture, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Carson, Edmonds, Gilmore, Moniz, Semlek, Teeters, Wallace, Swan, and Zerdan. Signed, Representative Semlek, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Semlek.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File Number 63 do pass. And I will ask our good majority floor leader from House District 4 to explain the bill.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, I bring to you Senate File 63, a very exciting topic and how we deal with the assessments on irrigation districts. Just a quick explanation. Each year, the board of directors of a district has to basically tell the county commissioners how much they're going to assess for water and for operating and maintenance charges for the district so that the assessor can then assess those lands for the next succeeding year. So in the fall right now, the way the law is, they look at that in July to get an estimate of what the cost will be for the next year. And what we've determined is it would be a lot easier and more accurate if we would allow them the option of making that estimate any time between July and October because of the irrigation season. A lot of times we have a better idea of what the assessment and the charges will be if we could wait until October at the end, the very tail end of the season. Everything's in, everybody's done, and then provide that estimate for the next year. So what the bill does, it adds the new language there on line 12 on page 3 that allows an irrigation district to, they still do the special assessment and the operating maintenance amounts, but they can do those any time after the third Monday of July and on or before the third Monday of October. So if it works for them to wait later in the year, like most of them would like to do, then this gives them that option, and that's the bill. I stand for any questions.
Question being called, all those in favor of Representative Buchanan's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 63 do pass. I apologize, Representative Semlek. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
No? Senate File 63 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Our next bill is Senate File 26. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 26, introduced by Senator Case, an act relating to crimes and offenses regarding eligibility concealed weapons permit. This bill was referred to Committee No. 1, Judiciary, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Begbie, Barbuto, Blickery, Kennedy, Patton, Peasley, Korberg, Throne. Excused, Gingrey, signed, representing Korberg, Vice Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 26 do pass. There are no amendments, and I would turn it over to the Majority Whip to explain the bill.
Representative Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and any of the other good co-sponsors of this piece of legislation, please feel free to get up and walk through the bill. Toward the end of last session, many of you that were here probably remember that there was, we all received a letter from the Attorney General explaining that some of the other states in the nation that we had enjoyed reciprocity with when we were carrying concealed with a permit, they were now rethinking their position on granting us reciprocity. And the reason that they were rethinking that position was because the eligibility requirements that we had put into place for receiving the permit were way more strict than what they were doing in their own state, and therefore their statutes said that in order to grant us reciprocity, they had to either change their law or they couldn't recognize our permits. So it was very late in the session, and we had no time to go back and look at our permitting statutes regarding concealed carry. And as a consequence of that, now we are revisiting this issue this year. So this, as you can tell, is a Senate file. It started over in the Senate. And if you just want to turn over to page 2, basically we've deleted the language that allows the Attorney General to go back and make sure that our laws are compatible with other states. And what we simply said was, basically, this reciprocity thing is a lot like a driver's license. Every state has their own set of requirements for a driver's license. We recognize driver's licenses from all states. People can come in from Vermont or Colorado or Nebraska, and we don't sit and say, well, does their driver's license, they only have 40 questions on their driver's license test. We have 60, therefore their driver's license probably shouldn't have reciprocity or be recognized in our state because it's not at the same level. It just didn't really make sense to start going back and scrutinizing the permitting process state by state by state to see if everything was compatible. Therefore, would our people who had permits have reciprocity with that state? So we basically, this piece of legislation deletes that, and it just says we're going to recognize permits from other states. They're going to recognize permits from our states if it's a valid state permit from that state. So that's the reality of it. Obviously, if someone from another state comes into Wyoming and they get pulled over and their permit has expired, they don't have a valid permit, and they're going to have some issues with law enforcement. So we basically deleted that language on page 2 that just recognizes a valid permit. And also then over on page 3, we made the same change just so that we would be consistent with the statute. And then at the bottom of page 3, this is one of the things, though, that did need to be changed. And that was before we had to add, we did not have this language in, so we need to add this language in on the bottom of page 3, lines 20 through 22. And that is, it says that you can't get a valid statewide permit in Wyoming. Right now it says if you've been committed to a state or federal facility for the abuse of a controlled substance. And we've added the language within the one-year period prior to the date on which you're making application. So in other words, if you're 18 years old and, you know, when you were 18, you had a problem with substance abuse and you went through the, you went to a facility and you haven't had any trouble and you're 40 years old, the way our statute says right now, if you've been out of trouble for 40 years, you still can't apply for a permit. This basically would allow you to apply for that permit if you've had a good, clean record. And then we added some additional language. If you go over to page 4, we've added that you've been convicted of a felony, not just any violation, and that you've not been pardoned, which, of course, pardoning comes from the governor's office. This new language on page C was also new language that the Attorney General said that it was significant that we do add this language. And that was the way it was written before. Even if you'd been convicted of a misdemeanor in our state, no matter when that was, if it involved controlled substance, you could not apply for a permit. So that's pretty tough because correct me if I'm wrong, but most of our misdemeanors when they come to controlled substance are use or possession. So there again, you're back to if you were picked up for possession of a controlled substance when you were, let's say, even 19, and now here you are again 40, you've had no trouble since then. According to our statute, you'd never be able to apply for a concealed carry permit. So if you'd led a good life, it just didn't work. So we added that language in there. And the same language being consistent about if you've basically not had any trouble within the year prior to the date of application, you're in good shape. And we made the bill effective immediately so that all of those people that have permits now, their permits, they have reciprocity with other states. So those are the changes that the Senate sponsor, working with the Attorney General's office, came up with that we needed to do in order to ensure that we had reciprocity with other states. So I would stand for questions on this piece of legislation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly rise in support of this bill. When we started working on this bill with the prime sponsor out of the Senate, we added the provisions that the good majority whip just talked about because we wanted to make this kind of an equitable situation. And this reciprocity is a key factor. The state that's to the southwest of Wyoming, they have numerous training classes on concealed weapons. So we've had them come up and conduct concealed weapon classes within Uinta County. And it raises a problem here because if you don't have reciprocity with that particular state and other surrounding states of the state of Wyoming, that causes a burden and a misunderstanding because they will enter into the state of Wyoming with a concealed weapons permit fully thinking that they are covered by that permit when in reality they weren't on numerous occasions. So this brought forward clarification for everybody that's involved with this process here. In addition, we have looked at this business about misdemeanors and various other problems that individuals enter into their lives. And I think the bill clears that up and certainly rise in support of this bill because we've had quite a lot of work on it this past summer.
Is there any other discussion? Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is on the bottom of page 3. When you've added that within that language within 1 year period prior, that section A there, or that paragraph A, if you are committed to a federal prison, is that a facility? So you would, after you're out of prison for a year, you could apply for a, if you're in prison because of a controlled substance violation, you'd have to wait a year, and then you could get one of these permits. Is that, or does that need to be rewritten or something?
Representative Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, that's not for a controlled substance violation. Mr. Chairman, that's if you've been committed to a state or federal facility for the abuse of a controlled substance, not like conviction of not like being a felon convicted of delivery or anything. That's for the abuse of a controlled substance.
Any more discussion? Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This will surprise some and astonish all the others. This bill is as proposed as it relates to the handling of concealed weapons and has largely to do on the ability to use those weapons and transport those weapons from one state to another. There's quite a push across the United States on this concealed weapon business. However, this one, in my mind, is quite supportable. For those of you that have accused me of being un-American and opposed to liberty, wake up. That's not true. On and for the measure.
Any other discussion? The question having been called, all those in favor of Representative Gingery's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate file number 26 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
No? Senate File 26 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The Committee of the Whole, the next bill for our consideration is Senate File 28. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 28, introduced by Senator Martin, an act relating to intergovernmental cooperation involving state loan and investment board loan refinancing. This bill was referred to committee number 3, which recommended it do pass. Ayes: Anderson, Edmonds, Escobel, Goggles, Madden, Miller, Peterson, Semlek, Wallace. Signed, Representative Anderson, Chairman.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with favorable recommendation that Senate File 28 do pass. And I'd also move that amendment number 1 to Senate File 28, or committee of the whole amendment, this amendment, and would explain the amendment and ask for your aye vote on it. If you'll turn to on the back side of the page there on line 3, it uses a little archaic language. It says all costs of refinancing the loan, including the cost of having the abstract brought down to date. Well, one thing, we usually don't use the term down to date. However, it is used in another portion of the statutes concerning farm loan votes, and that's the reason it came over here. But after discussion, we don't use abstracts anymore either. We use title insurance and the rest. So we just delete that language, and then it says, shall be paid by the borrowing entity, and no loan shall, where it's in question on the lien. With that, I would ask for the ask the question on the amendment.
The question having been called, we are on the committee of the whole amendment number 1. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Amendment number 1 has passed. Chairman, Mr. Chairman.
All right, I'll turn the explanation over the bill to Representative Blake, who will explain it.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the 60th, I bring you Senate File 28. Mr. Chairman, the Joint Powers Act loan program has been in existence since 1974. Pursuant to this program, the State Loan and Investment Board provide loans to local entities to finance infrastructure improvements. The Permanent Mineral Trust Fund and other unobligated permanent funds are the source of the funds for the Joint Powers Act loan program. JPA loans are made only for facilities generating user fees and only to the extent that the user's fees will repay the loan, such that the loan could be considered a reasonable and prudent investment of state permanent funds. Nevertheless, as SLIB has experienced with some loans, circumstances occur which cause the revenue generated by the facility to be inadequate for making payments under the current terms of the loan. Presently, the SLIB does not have the flexibility to offer a solution that may present relief for loan recipients or to protect the permanent funds. In particular, the SLIB does not have the statutory authority to refinance or reamortize Joint Power Act loans issued pursuant to Wyoming Statute 16-1-109. If Senate File 28 is passed, it will provide the SLIB with the flexibility to refinance and reamortize Joint Powers Act loans. The legislator has already approved authority for the SLIB to refinance or reamortize farm loans in Wyoming Statute 11-34-118. Similar authority for JPA loan program would be helpful in allowing the SLIB the flexibility to refinance, reamortize non-performing Joint Power Act loans in order to better protect the permanent funds invested in such loans. A brief summary, board may finance delinquent loans, change payoff period to no more than 30 years. Statute language specifies 40-year payoff period for original loan. All refinancing costs will be paid by the borrower. No new loans to those who are at risk of non-payment. An additional fee of 1% of the new loan amount will be paid by the borrower. The 1% fee will be added to the loss revenue account. I stand for any questions that I may be able to answer. Thank you.
Representative Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to use this as a process moment to share with you.
The State Land and Investment Board from time to time reports to the Minerals Committee, and they did last summer in the Joint Minerals. And at that time, they go over the results of some of their loans and that sort of thing. It became apparent there are some occasions when you need additional statute changes for them to correct something that can't be corrected by itself. With that background, one of the members of the Senate side of the Minerals Committee decided to sponsor this bill. It's a good bill, so I urge your support. It gives them a way to rectify very few, but some problems that can't be rectified under the existing statute.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 to Senate File Number... Whatever number we're on, 28. I'm assuming this will be a friendly amendment. It basically says that when they refinance a loan, they have 30 years in which to pay it off. And these loans can be up to $60 million in their original state. What this amendment does is simply says that the SLIB has to look at this every 5 years and readjust the interest rate. Now, in my opinion, that works both ways. If somebody gets in trouble when the interest rates are extremely low, and this interest rate is based on a five-year rolling average, but if we've had 5 years of low interest rates and somebody gets in trouble, then it is my belief that in 5 years they should be able to adjust that interest rate possibly up if that's the way the interest rates go. On the other hand, if we have a really accelerated inflationary period where interest rates are extremely high and we find some people that get in default, at that time you have the chance to lower your interest rate. So with that, I would stand for any questions.
We are on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2. Is there any discussion? Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Please note on line 1 of page 2 that re-amortize the loan over not more than 30 years. And these are revenue bonds, joint powers agreements, and that kind of thing. And so... if the economy does go down, that might be the reason that they are looking to re-amortize, or that the issue, the financial issue, becomes suspect or in doubt. The one thing that I might ask as a friendly amendment is to consider that it says an additional fee of 1%. It doesn't stipulate that it may charge up to 1%, but rather it's a flat 1%. That assumes that they've got the cash to pay that fee, and maybe something like up to would be a little bit more appealing.
Representative Shepperson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for the bill, on and against Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2. Ladies and gentlemen, when this program first began, it was not intended to compete with private enterprise. And that's what this Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 is allowing this program to do. If we want different loan products with different interest rates, if we want people to have different loan products with different interest rates, they need to go to their commercial bank, to their local bank. We, as a state, are not in the banking business. We need to keep our scope narrow, and we are going to be a lender of last resort. That's typically what the state has been. There are times when interest rates, most of them have been 8 or 9%. There are times when those interest rates have been low compared to market rates. There are times when those interest rates have been high. It's just a set fact. But we do not want to be competing with the local private enterprises, and this is really a huge step in the wrong direction, in my opinion, so on and against the Committee of the Whole Amendment.
Is there any more discussion on the amendment? Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just in some of the language in the amendment, it says the interest rate shall be adjusted every 5 years as provided in this subsection. I'm not quite sure I know what that means. Does that mean that it should be the interest rate according to the current rates of interest on similar market securities? And I guess, is there a definition of securities on the commercial market to which we look, or is that just a wide open term for SLIB or others to define?
Representative Blake.
I'm not so sure I would, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not so sure I would consider this a friendly amendment, so I would ask you to defeat the amendment.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In statutes, it says here that the board shall set rates of interest on all such loans according to the current rates of interest for similar securities on the commercial market upon a basis which is not less than the average rate of return realized on all permanent mineral trust fund investments, as determined by the state treasurer for the five calendar rolling years before. So all I'm trying to do is keep all these loans, and remember, these are delinquent loans. These are not for all the loans. This bill just pertains to delinquent loans. I'm just trying to keep the interest rates consistent with what the permanent mineral trust fund says. And when you originally refinance your delinquent loan, that's where the rate is set. And if you can realize that money at a higher interest rate in 5 years, I believe we should look at it. And if it's a lower interest rate, then once again, we should be able to look at it.
Is there any other discussion on amendment number two? The question being called, all those in favor of question or of amendment number two, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion has failed. We are now on the bill. Representative Brown.
Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to think a long time before you vote, pass this bill. I'm going to be a no on this. You may be a yes, but let's give this some careful thought about what we're doing. We've got the State Loan and Investment Board making loans to improvement entities. Those loans come with an application, a business plan, ability to repay, and they're secured by collateral in the district. And that security typically is the kind of collateral that's hard to deal with if something goes bad, because it's people's homes and it's their improvements and it's a lot of their stuff. And it's hard to deal with. And sometimes I just stand back in awe and watch a cold-hearted banker at work, because it takes a cold heart. It takes a really cold heart sometimes to do it. Now what we're saying is that the state can make those kind of loans, and my question to you is the state going to be that cold-hearted? Is it really going to have the will and the dispassionate objectivity that it takes to deal with a loan that's going bad and do it in a proper way? The other thing is, for instance, with water and sewer districts, bondholders who are not the state, other creditors of the district who are not the state, and the state would have the same thing. It works for all of them. They have all kinds of powers given to them in the statutes to make the improvement district do what it said it would do, which is pay the debt. If they refuse to levy the full amount of mills that they can levy, if they refuse to operate the district in such a way that it can service the debt, if they don't do those other things, then there are remedies which can be exercised through a court process to make them do that, with what's called a writ of mandamus. And a writ of mandamus orders them to do what they're supposed to do. With those kind of powers, districts sometimes have to be told to do it. Why? Because they're not the cold-hearted banker. It's hard, and they're probably the district board is members of the district. How cold and how dispassionate are they going to be? So then they go to our state loan people who made the loan in the first place, and believe me, they're going to hear every story. I've heard them all. And like I say, it takes a special kind of person to be that banker that can stay on task and get the loan collected. So my fear is there's going to be all kinds of refinancing that a prudent lender wouldn't do simply because of the politics and the heartstrings that are attached to it. Now, I'm glad the amendment didn't pass, because that would have given an additional opportunity to just go and start whining about the interest rate, frankly, if it doesn't suit you. But these districts get themselves in trouble. Very seldom is it trouble that they don't have the tools to address. They have the tools. The question is, will they make the hard decisions? And if they won't make the hard decisions and decide the easier routes to go to our state lenders and investment people and try to refinance the loan, then my question to you is that cold-hearted decision going to be made at that level? If you believe that it is, and if you believe that the state's fisc is safe, then I guess you vote for this. But if you have your doubts, and if you have concerns that somehow it'll get refinanced and continued and goofed around with, and it just never gets paid, and maybe the interest gets put on non-accrual so that they can take all the payments to principal and fool around, then at some point in that process of compromise, it becomes a loan the state shouldn't have made in the first place. It becomes a loan that a prudent investor wouldn't have made in the first place or would do something about. And I just have a lot of reservation there, and I, like I say, I'm going to be a no, because in the end, I don't believe the state, and I don't say it in a derogatory sense, but in the end, I don't think the state's got the backbone to deal with it. On and against the bill.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and first of all, I hope the state doesn't have as cold a heart as a banker attorney ever. But the testimony that we heard in committee was, through the years, there's only been two sets of these loans that they would like to refinance. And the reason to refinance them is they don't want the property. It would be a lot worse to foreclose than it would, because the people are unforeseen circumstances that happened. They still want to make the payments. They still want to pay. Then they have been making payments on those things, but they haven't made full payments. But it looks like a turnaround, and the state doesn't have to do this. They can foreclose, but there's some things that they would rather not own if they could make this thing work, which looks like they could. And so it gives them much the same powers they have on what we call the Farm Loan Board for those farms that through some kind of disaster couldn't make the payment, so they can refinance them and make the thing work with the interest. And I see very little danger because of the way they've run that. And so I would hope that they have a little better heart, but still be pretty tough.
Well, I think it's apropos that this lump of coal is sitting up here with this cold-hearted banker. So, Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, the operative words here to look at is on line 14 on page 1, when it says, whenever it deems necessary for the better protection of permanent funds of the state. And as it was explained to us in committee, and as the chairman just shared with you, these are rare situations where it might be a water district or an improvement district or some quasi-government agency, or it could be a government agency, runs into a cash flow situation that is not temporary, but it's permanent. And despite the best plans and the best pro formas that they had available, it isn't working out, all right? Now, the State Lands and Investment Board doesn't want to foreclose on a water system or something of that nature. But there's all kinds of ways where they can refinance over a longer period of time, and they can, and for example, the two that are before them right now will be able to operate successfully and pay off their loan if they just are able to do what's called for in this bill. So I urge you to pass it. Thank you.
Representative Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I have a question for the good sponsor of the bill, or perhaps even someone from the Revenue Committee. On page 2, line 5, I'm just wondering what the discussion was about the language, and no loan shall be refinanced where it appears refinancing will jeopardize. That word appears that just seems, I'm wondering if that word's not too constrictive, because it just says no loan shall be refinanced where it appears refinancing might jeopardize collection. That, I'm not sure about that word. I'm almost wondering if almost anything could appear that it's going to jeopardize collection, and if this isn't too restrictive, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman?
I think I can answer that. That takes care of the abstract part. If it appears from the title insurance that it would be jeopardized or another lien or something, then it wouldn't be refinanced. If something appears from the title insurance, that would jeopardize that loan, and that covers that portion that we deleted with Amendment Number 1, bringing an abstract down to date, if you like that language.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise for a little clarification in the discussion. You were suggested that you vote no on this for an expanded number of reasons, and one of them being that your real estate, your house, might be in jeopardy if the loan failed. It was my understanding to begin with that you were talking. The sponsor was talking about the revenue bonds, and it strikes me that the discussion has blurred the difference between a revenue bond on one hand and a general obligation bond on the other hand. Having sold a few of those, I want you to know the revenue bond is a completely different structured debt instrument than is a general obligation bond. And it would seem to me that political subdivisions that engage in revenue bonds are, as my colleague from my area pointed out, that would be a sewer improvement district, a water improvement district, that kind of a thing. And that is a revenue bond, and it's rated lower in its quality as a rule. Than a general obligation bond. The state of Wyoming has never had a failure with a general obligation bond. Most of those, the use of them is with school districts. And I'm not aware of a school district failing a general obligation bond in the state. But they're a completely different animal than a revenue bond. And if it's a revenue bond, then I think the capacity of the potential threat to the public is cared for by the ability to take a loan that is in trouble and re-amortize it. Gives the state an opportunity to address those political subdivisions to try and help them complete whatever the project was and to satisfy the indebtedness. I rose to begin with in support of the measure, and I continue to feel that way if my definition is correct and that can be confirmed by the sponsor.
Representative Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My clear understanding of what's in this bill is it's loans, and it's those loans that are managed by the Joint Powers Act in 1974. So the bonding I can't answer, because this is loans from my understanding, both when we heard it in the Minerals Committee and what I've read here this morning. Last but not least, this has been around since 1974, and they've only had two of the loans that are in problems. I think that's a pretty good record. Even as somebody who had some ties with banks, that would be a pretty good record on the number of loans that are out there.
Representative Blake.
I urge your support of the bill.
Representative Blake.
You're absolutely correct. There are two. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are only two instances that I know of. One is a sewer, water and sewer district in my backyard almost, and one is over the hill and down the summit. And I urge your support for this bill. Thank you.
Are there any other, is there any other discussion? The question having been called, all those in favor of Representative Anderson's motion that Senate file number 28 be passed, say aye.
Aye.
Those against, no. Motion pass. Representative Buchanan. Oh, Senate file 28 has passed the committee of the whole. Representative Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move committee of the whole beg leave to rise and sit again at 2 p.m.
2 p.m.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Are there any committee reports? Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number two, appropriations, will meet in room 204 at 1:30 to hear the natural resource large project funding Senate file 69. Thank you.
Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number one, judiciary, will meet upon adjournment this afternoon, not now, you know, like at 4, whatever, at room H8 for Senate file 54, confirmation of appointments, Senate file 53, engrossed obsolete laws, Senate file 65, engrossed termination of parental rights.
Representative Millen.
Yes, just wanted to let you know the minority party will be meeting at the Plains Hotel, and the trolley or the bus shuttle should be out to greet us. Thank you.
Representative Korberg.
Mr. Chairman, the majority party will meet at upon recess in the basement of the Hurstler Building.
Representative Landon.
Mr. Chairman, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet today on afternoon adjournment in room 302 to hear Senate File 48, engrossed licensure of midwives.
Representative Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet at 8 o'clock Friday morning in room H18 and hear Senate File 66, Industrial Siting Amendments, Senate File 59, Workers' Compensation Firefighters, and Senate File 52, Reduced Cigarette Ignition Propensity.
Representative McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 4, Education, will meet upon adjournment tonight in room H10, where we will take up Senate File 46, Engrossed School Facilities, Charter Schools, and Senate File 39, Engrossed Post-Secondary Education Options Program.
Thank you. The committee, Representative Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Privilege of the floor. Tomorrow morning at 6:30, Egg and I, the legislative prayer breakfast with a kind of a special event tomorrow morning with a former Speaker of the House.
The committee of the whole will meet again at the sign of the gavel at 2 p.m.